Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like and learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire. Yeah, that's fine. That'll work. All right, everybody, welcome back. We are back with episode 9 or 10. I can't remember now at this point. It's all running together of the Southern Collective. My name is Walt. I am joined by the Smashburn himself. Matt is off busy doing church functions. Parker is about 50 feet up in a West Virginia tree right now. I don't know if I'm supposed to have said that. Oh, well, it's out there now. He's up in a tree having a good old time right now. And so it is just Brett and I and a man who's legend. He is the talk of the check station. Okay. This is the kind of guy that, you see his truck and you kind of mentally mark the tag number. And when you're driving around midday, cause you're not, you don't have that confidence and you're kind of scouting, you're looking for King Kurt's, tag. You're looking for that spot. Cause what you're going to do is, if you're a lazy hunter, you're going to go in there and get his sloppy seconds on that WMA that he's just pillaged. We've got Kurt himself, Kurt or Curtis? Okay.
Curtis. Doesn't matter. Whatever.
Don't call me late for supper, right?
Yeah, doesn't matter. That's right.
Dude, I appreciate you taking time out your evening. You have been on a rampage here lately, but you pumped the brakes long enough to hop on a podcast with us, dude. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, man. It's an honor, honestly. So
we're going to be talking about public land, a public land progression, and the progression of a hunter in an area in a state, frankly, a part of the state that I don't really think is that great to hunt, by comparatively speaking to other areas. You found a lot of success, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. But why don't you kind of give everybody the elevator pitch? Who are you, and why should they listen to what you say?
Yeah, my name's Curtis. I reside in North Central Florida. I have a beautiful Cubana wife, four kids, and I don't know. I mean, probably the most interesting thing I would say is, like, I tend to, I think, surprise people with my eclecticness. I'm, you know, by day, I'm a total IT nerd. And, you know, but I also like to hunt, and I used to run long distances, and I love working on my truck and house projects, and just a varied assortment of hobbies and interests that don't, you wouldn't put them together usually. But yeah,
what do you think is the weirdest hobby that you have? I'm curious.
The weirdest hobby. What I would say, there was a period in my life where my wife called me the vegan running hunter. There was a period in my life where, so I was running marathons, training for ultra marathons. I, through a process of trial and error and just sort of just paying attention to my body, I had discovered that I really performed better on a plant-based diet. So I basically quit eating meat for about a year and ate just solely plants. I wouldn't call myself a vegan because vegans have typically like a ethical connotation, whereas obviously I have no problem killing animals and eating them. But in this period of my life, I was plant-based, but I still kept hunting. And so it was like the strangest thing. My wife's like, wait a second. So you're a marathoner who is plant-based yet hunts. She's like, you should start a blog or something because it's, you know, it's a pretty interesting combination. So, lots of random stuff, but
I took up running for about 6 weeks. And then I realized that I am too mentally soft for running. I've got no place in my, I'm a wind sprint kind of guy, right? So Gary Danielson shuts up, the commercial hits, and I'm wind sprinting to the fridge and back. Like that's my suicide run. Brett, do you run? I know you work out. Or are you a weightlifting kind of fella?
I used to run back in my younger days, but now I just go to the gym about an hour and a half, 4 days a week or so.
Do you really? Dadgummit, dude. I think I might be the laziest person out of the entire group. I haven't lifted something heavy except a deer in like 6 months, man. Like, I don't do anything to help take care of myself. I should. I really should. Well, so here's the deal. So we're going to get to your story here. And I think my hope is that tonight's podcast is going to kind of encourage some people. I think there's a lot of people who find themselves discouraged. We know in our Patreon group, we talked a lot about trust in the process, and we had a wide variety of topics about what the process looked like, how much success you should find, how hard it should be. We had a really great dialogue, and you had some really good insights in that dialogue, and then you proceeded to just schwack three deer in very rapid succession on public land. And so I kind of want to talk to you about your thought process going into that, but then also kind of what you did to get there. But before we get there, we got some business to tend to. As a Patreon member yourself, you know the benefits of the group, and one of them is we give shout outs on the podcast. So we've got five left as of right now: Dale Nelson, Haynes Riddle, and Nick Chandler. Just want to say thanks to all you guys for supporting the show. I am told that next week the Patreon hats will get here, and I'm going to tell you, I'll give you all a little sneak peek. It's going to be an embroidered patch hat. No more just embroidered hats. We're going super fancy for you guys. That's kind of what's caused the delay, is getting that patch kind of right. But it's supposed to be here next week. And along with that, we do a pile. Do y'all hear that hum?
Yeah.
Brett, your mic's humming again. Did something just cut on, like an AC or something? Yeah. Okay. Can you? What I need to do about that?
And then I know. Can do about it because my charger's not even plugged up. I tried this time without my charger being plugged up. Like, it's running off the battery in my iPad.
So you know what we need to do? I'm going to order you a mouse pad. That's what I'm going to do, because I think it's coming through like the bottom of your mic. I'm going to get you like a super soft mouse pad that you can put your
It's sitting on a mouse pad.
Is it really?
It's sitting on, yeah, a big old pad.
You know what? We're just going to get you a better set of headphones, and then this will solve the problem altogether.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well,
I got to have something different because it's just
sitting working. I agree. No.
I watch y'all drinking drinks, moving, and I can't even move my arm without y'all hollering at me for making noises. And frankly, it pisses me off. Because I can't do anything over here without y'all saying something.
Okay. Well, guys, what you should do is sign up for Patreon. We got to buy Brett a new mic, and so we need some extra money there. But along those lines, and I'll edit that out. It's no big deal. I'm not going to throw you into the bus like that. Along those lines, we do giveaways. And in the month of October, at the end of October, we're going to be giving away this dope ass knife. I think Parker's going to allow me to say that in this instance. He told me I'm not allowed to curse anymore when we merged. So whenever he's not here, the kids get to play. So we got a dope ass knife from Join or Die Knives. Kurt, you just saw this thing. It comes in a big waterproof hard shell. It's got a Bottomland Kydex holder, a honing rod, snake oil, which is what conditions it. It's got Soko lasered into it. This thing is sweet though, right?
Yeah, I think you should start giving those out as gifts to your guests that come on your show. Starting today.
I'll give you some extra entries. How about that? But if you want in on that knife, this is going to be a Patreon exclusive giveaway. Some of our giveaways are, you know, broad sweeping. We'll include anybody. And some of our giveaways are a little more limited. In the month of October, at the end, we're going to pick a winner. We're going to send that to you. Just our way of saying thanks. I think that's like a $250 knife package that he gave us. It's a custom knife and it's gorgeous. So, just want to say thanks to all the Patreon members, Tethered for helping us, or Join and Die, rather, I should say, Join and Die for helping to support this show. We have a promo code with them, Soko Hunt, get you 10% off an order. Go check them out. And if you're looking for a saddle, all the cool kids wear Tethered. So go check them out, tethernation.com. But, Kurt, we were talking in the group and you went MIA for a little while, and I'm glad you're back because honestly, your opinion, is one of those that kind of like walks the line. There's like two sides of the coin. There's like the naysayers and the yaysayers. There's the, you shouldn't name drop public land spots and you should, it doesn't really matter. And then you tend to be that guy that kind of walks that fence of like seeing both sides and connecting the group. And so, before we get to your story and what happened in the Patreon group, we talk a lot about trusting the process and that it takes what it takes to kill a deer and that you just have to love some of us, Brett and I, you have to love the process of pursuing deer. And if you base your values on that, then you're never as disappointed as if you go in every time hoping to kill something. And then statistically you don't, right? I'm not going to pretend to, or, you know, summarize what your statement is on that. So what's your thought on the process?
I mean, I feel like there's a direct correlation between what you put in and what you get out. And that's probably generally true in life. But, the harder you work, the more it sucks. I feel like the more it leads to success. And, I mean, you can just, you know, throw a pin at a map, walk out onto public land, set up and get lucky. Extremely unlikely. And I think most people probably don't have the patience for repeated failure for, you know, the statistical odds of that working out for them. So, you know, the only other way to really have any success with hunting is you've got to work your tail off. Yeah, to me, that's what the process is. It's sweating your butt off in July, scouting in the summer. It's getting chewed up by mosquitoes and wading through swamps. It's postseason scouting, as I know Brett likes to do a lot of. It's it's just a lot of hard work. A lot of hard work for a very small window of absolute exhilaration.
So, do you go, are you a trust the process kind of guy, love the process kind of guy, or are you I need to see something before I start getting depressed? Like, because basically the other side of the coin was for hunters who are learning, if you don't give them some form of a reward in the form of success, then people are going to quit hunting, right? And so just to kind of set the stage,
yeah.
I'm kind of the mindset of there's a fine line between getting your avocado toast and eating it too, right? Like it shouldn't just kind of be handed to you. Like the suck should kind of be part of it. What's your thought?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, I'm kind of, I guess, in the middle of the road there. I think that, yes, absolutely. Person has to fall in love with the process. You take a guy out, never hunted, whatever, you put him in a stand and he shoots a big buck and, has no love for the process. That person's probably not going to be a hunter long term because that's just not reality. Reality is it's, 90%, 95% hard work and suck, and 5 to 10% of awesome. But I guess even the suck isn't terrible. You know, that's loving the process. Like you have to get to that point. But I think with new hunters, experienced hunters should do as much as they, you know, feel comfortable doing to flatten the curve a little. And I specifically say that about Florida because, you know, again, my story of going, you know, 4 years of, I mean, if you saw how hard I scouted and the kind of crap I walked through and hacked my way through and just what I put like my body through for 4 years to have zero success, zero. I don't know that it's reasonable to expect most people to do that. I think that I and some members of our group probably have a level of hard-headedness, stubbornness, extreme, that we will, you know, stick it out and go through that. But I don't think everyone will. And so I don't know. I'm not saying that you got to remove it. I don't think you can. Like the only way you're going to be a hunter long-term, a good hunter long-term, is you have to fall in love with the process, and the process is hard. But if we can flatten that, particularly on public land in Florida for the new guys, I think it's helpful.
What do you think, Brett, do you have a thought? Otherwise I'll keep going. Okay. What do you think is the proper way? Like I say that with air quotes, as a guy that just came through that whole process, right? What is the way? Cause frankly, people criticize often. We've had a lot of conversations. Several members inside the group, Patreon group, have said like, hey, you guys hold stuff way too close to the vest. And because you hold it close to the vest, you're going too far. You know, that stuff being name dropping really good WMAs, right? Not giving people right. Spots. There's a lot of accusations. Looking back, you're killing multiple deer now. You found a level of success that I'm sure is going to build the confidence for you. What do you think is that flattening of the curve?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked because so in preparation for tonight, I made a list of all the best WMAs a number of honey holes of some of the members of the group, and I was just going to read those out real quick if you don't mind.
Start with split shots.
Yeah, I'll tell you all about where he hunts. I guess the first thing that comes to mind is things like, okay, so there are a lot of beginner mistakes that most hunters probably made, especially if you didn't have an older mentor. So, and that's part of my story, right? Is, you know, my dad got killed when I was very young. And I didn't have an older brother. You know, so a lot of things in life I've sort of done it the hard way. And so hunting is one of those things that I just, for various reasons we can get into later if you want to know, I just decided to start hunting about 10 years ago. And looking back, I mean, my first solo hunting trip involved me driving into, and I'll name drop this because no one cares, into Ocala National Forest. Driving down a road that you're not supposed to drive down that got narrower and narrower and narrower until I couldn't turn around and all I could do was go straight. Finding a little place to just barely get off the road, grabbing a blind, a huge two-man blind, lugging that into a field edge and setting it up right on the edge of a field. And I'm sure you're shocked to find out I saw nothing, absolutely nothing, right? But that's what you do when you're, you know, when you're a new guy. You try to set up in an area to see as much, you know, as much around you as possible. But deer don't tend to walk in those areas because they don't want to be seen. So I think there's a lot of basic stuff like that. You know, I was out scouting a property earlier this week, and there's this trail that I had seen earlier in the year. Is really, really good trail, absolutely beat down. I put a camera on it, and I haven't been seeing much activity, and I didn't really understand why. I went out there to pull the camera, and as I'm walking out, I noticed right where the trail like goes into the thick stuff, and I had my camera on the other side of the, like inside of the thick stuff, there's a pine tree there, and it's all chewed up from a climber, and it's right on the main trail that people walk in and drive in, but it's right at a bend. And when I saw it, I immediately knew what had happened, because it's exactly the kind of thing I used to do. They set up on the bend of a main road so they could look to the left, mm-hmm. and they could look to the right, and they could shoot anything crossing the trail. Like, that was like my standard hunting spot, is find a spot where you can look down a road and hopefully see something crossing the road and shoot it. I think, like, flattening the learning curve for new guys looks like explaining to them those things that just do not work. Like, I mean, yes, that can work, but again, we know in Florida, long term, like, that's not going to work out so well. So, like, just sort of removing a lot of the stupid things that we all do beginning and learn the hard way, or we have an uncle or a brother or a dad to teach us that, like, no, that's not where you hunt. You know, you don't hunt looking down a trail.
So from the community, right, as a new hunter, what were we supposed to do to help you?
You did help me. By the time I came in, I was on, I guess, sort of the, I would say the back end. I had gone through 4 years of getting my butt kicked, but progressively learning more and more and more. And then, you know, you guys were a tremendous help last year. I mean, there were a number of times, key moments that, you know, where I would have either made a mistake or I wouldn't have had success were it not for members of the group giving me little bits of wisdom, like Ron saying, you know, don't leave deer to find deer. And, you know, some of the things I remember Graybeard saying, you know, telling me about his motto that year was, continue the hunt. And, you know, how I kind of interpreted that and how I applied it, I think really paid off for me that year. And so, a lot of those sayings you did help me with. I think if I had been coming in early on, I mean, I think one way could have been maybe me showing like a satellite map and saying, okay, this is the property. This is where I think I'm going to go hunt, and having you guys go, really? Like, you're just going to go set up on a field edge and a blind? Have you brushed that blind in? Has it been out there for a number of weeks? Have you seen any deer in that field? Do you have any reason whatsoever to believe there's going to be deer in that field? What sign is there? Have you scouted it? You know, and then me going, no, I was just going to go set up on a field edge and go, okay, well, your odds of seeing deer then are probably pretty small. And then, you know, so I think that's one way that if I had come in, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, that it could have helped me.
Brett, you got any thoughts?
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I mean, I can say that. I don't know.
Okay. That's fine. I just I don't want to dominate the conversation. I think, Kurt, when I look back on what I did in my journey here in Florida, because Southeast Georgia, I have figured out. I mean, I proved that in 2020. I went over there and immediately got on deer on a piece of public I'd never been to before. Florida kicked me in the teeth. It just kicked me in the teeth and kicked me in the teeth. And it was like I was just battered and bruised. I think what would have helped me in that instance, and what I think I did wrong, was I went too hard into the technical side of it. I thought, okay, this place is so challenging. This place is so overwhelming. I need to go find the baddest dude out there, study what he's doing, and apply it. And over the course of all those years, you know where I found the most deer and learned the most from? It acted like a hub. It was feed trees. And I think some of the wisdom we can share out there, and this is based on off of my interaction, and I'm sure that's different from other people's, but I think one of the things we could do from the jump is give people tools that equip them to expand beyond that, right? Like you teach somebody how to turn on a lathe, right? You start with something really simple, like a rough and gouge, and you work with that rough and gouge, and it has all the basic principles of a parting tool and everything else. And to a lot of you, that doesn't make any sense, but there's a starting tool that you can grow your wisdom from, your skill set, your technical skills from. And when I started finding feed trees, I started finding trails. When I started finding trails, I started finding bedding. And when I started finding bedding, I found transition areas. And we tell these new guys, like, hey, go find a transition area, and here's what it looks like. But then Split Shot will get on here and be like, find the transition area within the transition area. Like, what's a guy listening to that podcast supposed to do with that, right? Like, what the hell does that look like? Good luck describing it, yeah. Right? But if you tell somebody, hey, go out there in October and walk underneath oak trees. Anybody and their brother can figure out what the hell an oak tree is, right? Walk until you find an oak tree that's got poop, tracks, and crunched up acorns underneath it. And then once you find that, look for trails and then follow those trails back. You equip them with the knowledge to go out and do. Moreover, you can aerial scout feed trees, right? You can jump on Onyx. Right. There's an Onyx layer that'll tell you where the oak trees are. You know, if not just in Florida, going and putting on a wintertime map and seeing what trees, you know, have lost their leaves versus don't. I mean, you can pick these things out. And I wish somebody had stopped and told me that and said, hey, start simple.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot there. I think the start simple part is huge. I think stay simple as well, because I am very guilty of this. Like, as hunters, it seems like a lot of times we like to overcomplicate things. We like to, you know, I'm going to go make a mock scrape, and I'm not knocking mock scrapes. That's a great technique. A lot of guys have a ton of success with it, but we like to really complicate things and not just go for the obvious, like, well, you know, fine. Like, why are you in this spot? Oh, well, there's a thermal hub that meets a this and that. It's like, cool. What deer sign's there? Well, I hadn't seen any deer sign, but like, no, look at the, you know, it's like, no, just go out in the woods and walk until you find really good deer sign and then hunt that. And it really, I think it can be that simple. It's hard to do that. It's hard to, like, especially when, you know, you can walk a lot in the woods in Florida and get your butt kicked and not find good deer sign, or find deer sign that is, again, as an experienced hunter, you know, that deer sign is almost certainly being made at night, and not during the day. So, I mean, that's probably part of why, you know, starting out, I hunted, trails, because you would see deer tracks in trails. But again, we know that deer don't typically walk down a wide open trail unless they feel really safe doing so, and that's generally at night. I think the feed trees thing is huge, and I think that's also, it ties back into the first question about how we can help new hunters. One of my Because I didn't have like a personal mentor. I created mentors like out of others that I found that I aspired to be like and looked up to, and probably there's none bigger than Warren Womack. I love that man. I've read everything I could find. I've watched pretty much every single thing he's put on YouTube. And I remember him talking about, you know, hot feed trees. And then one day I finally came upon a video of him saying like, so this is what a hot feed tree looks like. And I about fell out my chair. I thought I knew what a hot feed tree looked like until I saw what Warren was talking about. And then I was like, oh, and then it clicked for me. Like when he says it looks like it got tilled up, that's exactly what he means. It looks like something came through and just turned up the ground, and there's tracks, and there's, like you said, there's poop there. And, you know, that's not what I thought I was looking for. And I guess the last point on that, and again, it ties back into the whole process and embracing the suck. Warren talks about his sort of style of hunting is this sort of speed scouting, highly mobile. And he talks about he would literally run through the woods in Louisiana, run through the swamps from tree to tree to tree, checking these oak trees because he wanted to cover as much ground as possible. So he'd go like hunt the morning if he had a spot. And then he'd get down and he'd spend the middle of the day literally running from oak tree to oak tree to oak tree to cover so many square miles and find a hot feed tree and then hunt it. And he almost never hunted the same tree twice. So, I mean, you think about the amount of work that man put in, you know. Probably no coincidence that he's still in the kind of shape and condition he's in at his age when he's worked that hard his life for hunting, you know.
Brett, I'm curious for you. You know, we've talked a lot about how you find success. I shared my idea of what it would look like. What point, what strategy, what technique were you employing when you started to have those aha moments and you started to be able to build out from there?
One thing I was going to say though, real quick before that, was thinking something really simple you could do as a new hunter is getting out and walking where your oak trees are and go in the morning when you would typically be hunting and go in the afternoon when you typically be hunting and bump deer. When you see deer run out from oak tree, walk over there, look for poop sign and pay attention to where the deer run to, because that's where they come from. That's their bedding area. And that's the way they're going to be coming back in there. So then plan your route and the wind to stay out of that area. It's one of the simplest things you can do early season and get on deer quickly.
Yeah, that's a really great idea, actually.
Yeah. Aha moments. Man, I hunted public land when I was young, so I'd done all the wrong things. I hunted pretty woods. That's all I knew. I grew up hunting green fields, just ladder stands that my dad or whoever put up. And he used to put some up in swamps for me and would tell me to go hunt them at certain times. And I'd always see deer, like, you know, because he's the type that he liked to walk and hunt. He was just slip hunter. So he would find good spots where he always found deer and he'd put me a stand up. But I didn't know why I seen deer. So early on, I made a bunch of mistakes and started just after spending tons of time in the woods and making mistake after mistake. It's really when I started learning. I couldn't tell you exactly what the first aha moment was, but just really bumping deer and looking for actual poop from deer instead of just tracks or something like that when you're trying to hunt. Like feed sign, because you got hunters that like to hunt feed, you got hunters that like to hunt transition and travel routes, and you got hunters that like to hunt bedding areas and real thick. So you kind of, through that process as a new hunter, you kind of figure out what you tend to like to do better. Like Curtis thinks he likes feed trees and maybe the travel routes and transition spots like that, and I'm more of a transition type spot and bedding area hunter. You know, you just kind of figure that out through the process of a new hunter and you lean into what you like.
If you could go back to your younger self, I used to do this on the podcast and be like, you know, put the dog on the blood, right? Whenever you have a tracking dog, you put it on that first drop of blood where that deer was. Where would you have placed you when you were trying to get serious about deer hunting? What strategy would you have put yourself on? What would that have looked like?
Probably what I'm doing now is I would probably take, you know, new Curtis doesn't know his rear end from a hole in the ground when it comes to hunting, and I would take him to an area that has an active feed tree and is near bedding and has, you know, and I would show him, like, okay, this is what you're looking for. You see all of this sign, you see not one trail, but multiple trails. You see, how the ground is all torn up underneath this feed tree. You know, if it's anywhere near the rut, you're going to see a lot of like bucks advertising in that area, scrapes and rubs and things like that. But I think once you see it, and you realize, oh, okay, that's what good sign looks like. That's what a good spot looks like. Then I think it makes it a lot easier to keep walking and walk past the sites that are not good or are just marginal. But if you don't know what it looks like to begin with, then it's hard to just go out and find it. So I think that's what I would do. And that's what I'll do with my son, is I'll take him to a great area and I'll say, this is Dad's honey hole. You're never allowed to come back here, but this is what it looks like. Now go find your own.
Brett, what about you? What would you have said?
I told myself to hunt deer and not where I wanted to kill a deer, not what I thought was pretty woods or something. Actually, if I had to come up with at least two or three things to say why I thought a deer would be there, if I couldn't answer that at a young age, and I probably shouldn't be hunting there.
I think for me, it would have been, don't be afraid to bust deer. You know, Brett, when I share no secrets here, right? I think everyone knows at this point, one of the reasons why I reached out to Brett was because I wanted to learn from him. He clearly had something to teach, right? And one of the things I noticed about Brett was he was able to differentiate between sign that was indicative of a deer passing through versus sign that was indicative of a deer hanging in an area. You heard him talking about poop. If you find a bunch of poop, statistically speaking, there's probably something there for them to eat, right? Because that generates the bowel movements, right? Let's be nerdy here for a second. You ever eat a big meal, you loosen your waist, and about 30 minutes later, you got to go, you know, peel the paint off the wall somewhere, right? I mean, that's just what it is. And so the same thing is applicable for deer. But also, just statistically speaking, the longer you're in an area, more likely you're going to have to poop. And the areas that I have found the most amount of success, you find that sign that is just a little more indicative of a deer being in that area. Those little dinner plate pawns that you find down two tracks where a buck's been going down the road and they just paw. That's not it. Right? A feed tree with some heavy fresh rubs and a couple scrapes and poop everywhere, them deer have to be there for a long ass time for all of that to start to accumulate to be there. And I think I've always been so scared to bust deer out of the area because I grew up on the Drury brothers and the Primos. Don't go into an area until it's time. Don't go into an area until it's time. Because, dude, we're playing a different game. On public land, you're playing a different game. Get in there, bust them, figure out why they were there. Like Brett said, you saw them go through there. Now get, you know, to run and escape that way. They felt comfortable going that way. Go figure out why. Where are they going?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what I did for the opener. I scouted the day before. I busted deer off this ridge and watched them run into the swamp. I looked at the area, made a perfect pinch point, a thicket here and a thicket here, the 20-yard gap that all the deer ran through it. Early season, don't overthink it when they're in hunted, and should have killed a 100-inch 8-point opening morning, doing just what I figured I'd do, leaving the food source and going back to bed.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really bad advice, not because for any reason other than it's the wrong advice for the right person. right? Like, it's the right, like my wife says all the time, whenever we get a deal on something, if it's the right deal but the wrong time, it's the wrong deal, right? Right. It's that whole mantra. I think that we have to sort through it all. But all right, we belabored that. Unless Curtis or Brett, y'all have anything else to add? Any closing thoughts on that? Okay.
It's time to get into it.
We got to talk about the man who has systematically arrowed more deer in a few days than just about any other person in the state of Florida. Dude, you have been on a roll. Kind of set the stage for everybody. Describe this area where you were hunting.
Okay. So first of all, it's a piece of public that I've hunted for, I guess this is probably the fifth or sixth year. I've never really had success out there, until last year. Last year, I don't remember the exact time frame, but, remember the hurricane that we had that shut down some of the WMAs? Last year.
Lord, I can't even remember, dude, to be honest with you. We have so many freaking hurricanes here in Florida. If you're not listening from Florida, I mean.
Yeah. So I had been hunting this place for a couple of years, and like I said, hunting it at archery and noticing rut activity and just activity in general seemed to be picking up on the tail end of archery leading into muzzleloader. And so I had decided that, you know, I was going to, you know, one, that I was going to start muzzle loading, but also that I was going to start using archery to do sort of some in-season scouting. And so I was out there hunting. Again, that hurricane was coming through. A lot of guys had planned to hunt that week. I think some had quotas that got canceled because WMAs got closed, and this one happened to stay open. And so I'd gone out there to an area, and I'm up in a tree, and it's blowing like 20-something miles an hour. And it just got to a point where I'm like, okay, this is stupid. Fun, badass, but stupid. So I decided to get down, and I thought, you know, with the wind conditions that we have right now and the rain, now it was like just kind of that persistent drizzle but not pouring. This is a really good time to go scouting, because, you know, you've got a lot of good cover scent or sound. The rain's going to wash, you know, so your scent out. The deer probably aren't moving because of how bad the weather is. So, started driving some of the roads and just sort of looking, and I noticed, in this one particular area, I saw a couple of smaller, like persimmon trees right off the road that had fruit. And on a whim, I was like, normally I would drive past something like that because I'd be like, you know, if I'm seeing that, so is every other hunter that drives by this. And so just like when I see scrapes right off the road or a big, you know, big rub on a tree right off the road, I'll usually ignore it because if I saw it and got out and went and looked at it and followed it, then probably so did someone else. But this time I decided to get out, saw some fresh tracks under it, and kind of started walking in and immediately found, like, you know, guys talk about like the cattle trail, just an absolute beat down trail where you couldn't even hardly make out any specific tracks because it was just so beat up. And so then I just started walking that, and it walked right up to a very large, very mature persimmon tree. And underneath that tree was just absolutely tore up. And then I started looking around it, and I started finding scrapes, started finding rubs, not one, but many, started finding fresh poop, started finding different kinds of tracks, not just deer tracks, all sorts of animal tracks. And so I ended up dropping a couple cameras in that area and getting out and deciding that, you know, I was going to try to come back there and hunt that. Yeah, cameras pretty instantly started picking up sign and picking up deer and good bucks, two or three very nice bucks on that, like within days. And so I went back in there while it was still archery season, and The first night I hunted it, I saw a small buck, didn't get a shot at him, saw some does. I figured that I wasn't quite close enough to where I needed to be, so I made a mental note of where I wanted to be in the morning and sort of made an adjustment, went in, and this is the one you guys will probably remember. It's still probably the biggest buck I've seen out there. He was walking through. The way this lays out is it's sort of, if you can imagine, sort of a bowl, sort of a depression, and there's high sides almost all the way around it. And on one side is persimmon, and there's some oaks and sort of the feed area. And on the other side is very obvious bedding. And in the middle, it's kind of a thicket. And so it's a travel corridor. So anyway, I'd seen this very nice buck walk in. I'm certain he would have been a registry. About 80 yards out, I, on a whim, just threw a couple grunts his way, and he stopped and turned and started walking directly to me. And I, you know, losing my stuff, I'm shaking like a leaf. I get my bow up. I had pre-ranged some trees, but in the moment, I completely forgot everything that I had pre-ranged and where those trees even were. And I thought I guessed his range right. I didn't. I shot the first arrow and missed him. And he kind of bounded off 10 yards or so and then stopped. He's still very confused. It was pretty high up. He couldn't really see me. So he kind of just froze and was kind of looking, and I was able to hide behind the tree, knock another arrow. Long story short, ended up flinging a second arrow at him. That one hit a branch and missed him again. And then he took off. And so still heartbroken about that one, but it gave me another piece of the puzzle. See, up to that point, all I knew is like, oh, there's feed trees here. But that showed me, oh, wait, they're actually traveling through here. This is like an actual travel corridor. And then later on that year, with a muzzleloader, this is the one that I shot at a nice buck in there, and the powder had gotten wet. I didn't know at that point that you needed to tape the breech or whatever to protect it from the early morning dew that we have in Florida. And so the powder got wet, and later that evening when I tried to shoot this buck, it just made a loud pop and he took off running, but no bullet. So I had, two heartbreaks. This was all last year, but again, it really, like, I learned a lot about this area. And so, and then I also started kind of thinking that I knew what was happening as far as the bedding was concerned. I wasn't sure, but I thought I did. And, that's the short version. Went back in there, this year, for a lot of reasons, I didn't really have an opportunity to scout. So I just went right back to that spot, went actually right back to the tree that I shot at that nice buck twice and missed opening morning. And just about an hour after first light, I heard footsteps coming in behind me. And there was a nice buck there, shot him, and then looked over and there was another buck, and tried to shoot that one too, but I missed him. And that was sort of the beginning of that week that was crazy and fun. But
take us for the ride, man, to break down for everybody what happened, because I think everybody, if you asked everybody, like, describe the ideal outcome of several days hunting, they'd be like, a deer. And yet, yeah, I think you passed / saw more deer than most Floridians see in a season.
Yeah, I mean, this area is crazy. Again, it's one of those. How did I say it? I was like, I stumbled upon the answer and then started asking the right questions. Like, I just kind of dumb lucked into this spot, and then because of the sign and seeing deer in there constantly, I started like going, well, wait a second, why do they always seem to be moving in one direction in the morning and a different direction in the evening? And it sets up perfectly with the prevailing wind in that area. And so kind of started putting those pieces together. Well, the wind's always kind of generally blowing this one direction, and they seem to almost always be moving in one direction. So, yeah, I kind of started piecing it together. But, so that morning, shot that 6 point. He's a small six. And then yeah, tried to shoot his buddy. I think I ended up seeing a doe or two that morning. But that deer, I thought I had made a bad shot. Well, I did make a bad shot. I'm still not entirely sure what happened with that one. My best guess is that, remember I said that it's kind of a bowl, and down in the bottom of the bowl is how they like to travel, but it's very thick in there. And I'm sitting up, not only am I up on the sort of the rim of the bowl, but because this particular tree that I'm hunting out of, there's not good cover or anything around it. I'm as high as I can possibly go with my climbing system. So I'm 40 feet up in the tree. Yeah,
holy
way up there.
Christ, dude.
So, but I can look down into it. It's basically like setting up on the edge of a cutover or something and being able to look down in there. And so the deer.
Are you a one sticker?
Yeah, one stick.
Right, keep going.
Yeah. So the deer walk in there. They don't think anyone can see them because it's so thick. But when you're, you know, already 10 or 20 feet above them, and then you add, you know, another 30 or 40 feet to that, I can see them just fine. So anyway, long story short, at some point, that buck came in behind me, but he was like right on top of me, and he was on my weak side, and, I didn't really have time to take that shot. It would have been a very, very sharp angle, like almost straight down through his back. And I knew not to take that shot. I screwed that up actually the previous year. And so I was waiting and hoping that he would sort of hook out in front of me and give me a broadside shot, but he didn't. He just sort of turned directly away from me and was walking, and all I was looking at was his rear end. So at about 30 yards, I realized, okay, this deer is not going to turn and give me a shot. So I grunted. And that stopped him. He turned around and kind of started coming back towards me investigating. But what he did is he walked down into that thicket. And so, at some point, I think between putting down my grunt tube and getting knocked and everything, I think he turned around and I didn't catch it. And, long story short, I shot at the wrong end. There's no other way to put it, because the arrow entered, the extreme back, edge of, one of his rear hams and exited just behind the ribs on the other side. So blew out guts. Didn't know it at the time, but I had hit the femoral artery. He jogged off about 10 yards, stopped, didn't seem to really understand what had happened. And then I saw him run about 100 yards, and he ran directly to what I had already started kind of concluding was probably bedding. And actually, that was another piece of the puzzle, was seeing where he ran. Like Brett said, deer typically, when they're scared, they're going to run to where they feel safe. And so, so that's what happened with that one. Got down, luckily, and this is what I love about the group. I immediately started following what had happened. Immediately had guys coming on telling me what to do, guys like Brett and Cole and a lot of, too many to even think remember right now, but a lot of guys coming on and giving me advice. Heck, even like Charles from Pennsylvania was like, dude, here's the number for United Blood Trackers, you know, just tons of guys coming in and helping out. And I played it right. I walked around just a little bit to like no more than 30 or 40 yards from my tree, about 20 yards from the hit site, just to see if I could find any good blood. I couldn't, so I backed out and called a dog. And the dog came in and immediately got on the trail. And within 30 seconds, there's a puddle of blood on the ground the size of like a dinner plate. I had never seen that much blood. And that's when I realized, like, oh, this deer is dead for sure. And we found it. The dog went straight to him. He was less than 100 yards away, just on the edge of that bedding. So that was the first one. That was that first morning.
Keep going, man.
Keep
going. Okay.
Don't stop.
All right. All right. So then.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this. All right. Now, hold on. You pause. Yeah. So you give me the opportunity to think about this. Do you think, it's an indelicate question, but you shot at the wrong end of the deer, do you think it was just adrenaline? Like,
Probably. I'm still learning to control that. Graybeard likes to call it caveman brain, and I think I suffer from caveman brain badly. Like, I try to slow down, I try to breathe, I try to, like, do all the things, and I am definitely getting better at it. I had J-Bo cracking up one time because I was like, you know, I see a deer, and the only thing that is going through my head, I'm trying to talk to myself and calm myself down, but my brain's going, shoot, 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 you know? And so, I'm getting better at it, but yeah, I think it was a combination of adrenaline and just taking my off the deer and it being so thick in there that, this is a pretty big pine tree. And so, and my grunt tube is on the right side of the tree and that's where the deer was, but he moved to the left. And I think what he did is he went to the left, he looked around and then he turned and went back to the right. And I just missed that turn. And I mean, also if you saw the area, the kind of stuff that's in that thicket can easily be mistaken as antlers. And so, and it wasn't like he had a huge rack to begin with. So it was just sort of the right things coming together that led to me putting it on his front shoulder, but it was
rear
shoulder.
Yeah.
It was rear shoulder. Yeah.
Thank God you used those fancy broadheads.
Yeah, I got super lucky on that one. And you know, I always, you know, like most hunters, I always try to make an ethical kill, and I hate it when I don't beat myself up pretty big for it. So because I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm choosing to hunt the bow, you know. And so I feel like if you're gonna do that, then you really owe it to that animal to, you know, be as deadly with it as you can be. And so yeah, I was pretty upset about it, but I was glad once I saw that puddle of blood and that he died really, really quickly. So then, yeah, that night I hunted that night in the same area, different tree. And can't remember. I do remember. So, right at last light, I was just doing some soft running and had a nice buck. I'm guessing 3-year-old 8-point come in. But it was one of those where, you know how when the light is just low enough, you look over and your brain goes, that's a deer. But you're not quite sure it is. And then you look back and then slowly your brain kind of connects the dots with the shape and the fact that it's not moving, but it's like the right shape. And then finally it like turns slightly or it does something and you're like, oh crap, that is a deer, you know? It was one of those. So I saw it and he was close to me, but he wasn't coming my direction. He had come in hearing the grunt. And so I grunted him a couple more times. He came back probably within, I would say, about 30 yards. But after what I had done that morning, I did not feel – I didn't trust my 30-yard pin even. And it was low light, and I was not about to wound another deer. So I just – let him walk, but he was a good one, really good one. So then the following day, I had talked to a real good friend of mine from the group, and I said, hey dude, you should think about calling in sick to work one day this week and come hunt
with
me. I want
to blast this guy so bad, but I'm not going to do it. Yeah.
And so he came back and said that he was going to do that on Thursday. And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, then I'm gonna let this place cool off a little bit. I had already shot two of my 3 arrows. And so what I decided to do for Wednesday was to kind of sleep in, catch up on my sleep a little bit because – you know, as a old fart, I do have to be careful about hunting too hard. So I slept in, I sharpened up my broadheads, I went in the backyard and shot 10 arrows at 30 yards and they were all in, you know, the main ring. So I was like, okay, like my 30-yard pin is fine. I can shoot 30 yards. I went back in there Wednesday night, but I didn't want to go back into that same area. I wanted to stay out of it for the Thursday hunt with my friend. And so, thinking that I had figured out where the bedding was, I just quietly sort of walked in middle of the day about 3 o'clock or so and got as close to the bedding as I could. It's real thick, what I would call scrub. It's a bunch of those like low bush oak trees, about waist to shoulder high. And it just looks like an impenetrable wall of just scrub habitat. But you get up in a pine and look down into it, and you see that it's actually a maze, and they walk all through there. So I got up that and just kind of treated it as an observation set. I set up so that my wind wasn't blowing into the bedding, and just got my binos out and just was glassing. And right at 6:30, I saw a really, really, really nice buck stand up out of his bed and walk out, and recorded him walking out of the bedding, crossing a road, and headed in a direction that will be getting explored here very soon, figuring out why he was walking that direction. But so that really, like, that was another huge piece of the puzzle, because, like I said, then that confirmed, okay, yeah, this absolutely 100% is bedding. And so then, yeah, we went back in there, met up with my buddy. We hunted it Thursday morning. And he set up on one end, very close to the bedding. And I set up on, not all the way on the other end, but on a tree that's close to the other end, but also like kind of more down in the actual bottom. Right on the edge of, a stand of like young pines. And, anyway, long story short, right around, I'd been seeing pretty consistent movement out there around 8:30 in the morning. So, right at 8, I started getting ready and really, you know, hyper-focusing, and everything worked out. I was looking to my left, my strong side. The deer did exactly what I thought they were going to do. They came in. If I had set up how I had Tuesday morning, they'd have been coming in behind me on my weak side. That's why I repositioned. They came from the exact same direction, but now he's on my strong side. He came through those pines, but I was able to see him and grab my bow and get ready. I had prearranged a bunch of trees, so I knew exactly where he was. I even had the time to like pick a spot and say, okay, that's where I'm going to stop him, and that's going to be 20 yards. And just everything worked out. He stopped. He was coming in with his head up, so I couldn't draw. But he literally got to the spot where I was going to stop him and dropped his head, and his head went behind some bushes. And so it was just absolutely perfect. I drew back, and he picked his head up, and when he did, I released the arrow. And just perfect pass-through. He ran, same deal, ran 10 yards, stopped, looked around confused. Stood there for about 10 seconds. I saw his back leg start to buckle. He tried to run, and less than 10, 15 yards from there, I literally watched him go down, and, that was it. And that's to date, probably my most favorite hunt, my best bow buck for sure. And my best like shot execution, like did everything right. Yeah. Go ahead, Brett.
I had a question in there, Curtis.
Yeah, is he talking right
now? Would you say that buck was going back to bed?
Oh, yeah. Hold on, I can't.
I think it was in the morning, and I think it was headed to bedding.
Yeah, and a reason I know you said there was like acorn trees and persimmons in that area, but you were catching that movement coming back to bedding.
Yeah, so we think so. My friend who was set up closer to the bedding. I didn't know this. He had texted me at some point and said, big buck, 80 yards to your, I think he said east. He had seen the buck right where those persimmons are and where some of the oaks are. He had seen that buck milling around in there. And so we think the buck kind of worked through that area and then made a loop and came back and was walking back to his bedding.
What time of the day did you end up shooting that deer?
It was like right at 8 in the morning.
Okay. What was the moon doing?
Honestly, and I don't want to start anything here. You're going to hate this, but I don't pay any attention to the moon. I'm not convinced. Skeptic. I want to believe. I really want to believe. I am actually about to read a book. The book, what's it called? Moonstruck, I think it's called. I really want to believe it, but I just don't know. I think if anything, moon affect deer in the same way that the moon affects fish. I believe it's probably mostly indirectly, like moon affects the tides and the tides affect the fish. But yeah, so sorry, Brett. I really don't know what the moon was doing there.
The only reason why I ask is we had a full moon then that was up. I believe it was around 4 o'clock or so in the morning when it coincides closely with daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I typically see when those mornings. I'll sit up on a transition or by a bed, and you'll catch the deer going back to bed during shooting light because they stayed out later.
Later, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, look, I 100% believe you and your experience. I think you're onto something. I want more hard evidence and science to actually support it and back it up. And so far I haven't seen it, but, I definitely believe and listen to guys like you when you say that. So, and I know you have a theory about illumination and how that affects them as well. And, I think you're probably right.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Awesome.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Y'all should do this.
I was just curious. I didn't know if you paid attention to that, but that's the same thing a couple of days later that I run into the same thing, catching the deer going back to bed.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that was that hunt. I think saw a couple does that morning. Saw one for sure. I think I saw a second one. And then, yeah, we got down and recovered that buck. And that evening, I went back to the same spot. My friend went to a different location. And really, I don't think I saw any deer that night, but had a really cool encounter with a black bear. He came in smelling the fresh kill, and I got all this on film, and it was a really, really cool thing to show my kids and show you guys. But yeah, he came in within, I would say, 10 yards of my tree before he realized that the fresh kill was, you know, 20 feet up a tree and was me. And and then turned inside out and took off running. And that was a really, really cool experience and an awesome way to end an amazing day hunting. So,
and I would say that was an experience we got to share with him because he shared that with us on Marco Polo,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool to share that with all the other guys that's out hunting while you're working.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurts, but it's nice at the same time.
Well, I think that's also what's kind of cool about it is like we all feed off of each other. And so like everyone, I imagine, like I get in sort of slumps where I don't feel like putting out the work to go hunt, or I'm just not feeling it. I got other things going on and I'm just kind of whatever. But then I come on and I see, you know, Bronk go and whack an absolute beast. And I'm like, oh, I got to get back out in the woods, you know? You know, it's then that I end up posting something and then that drives the next guy. And it's like, we all just like feed off of each other to, hunt hard and, you know, it's awesome. So that was basically the end of that week. And, so then I went back out there, the next week and, same setup, same deal, open in the morning, 8 o'clock thereabouts. Had a another, you know, nice 6 point. Well, that one from the previous week ended up being my best bow buck. He was like 145 pounds and pretty good main beams and good buck. And this one was sort of in between the first one and the second one. This one that came in earlier this week, actually. Really cool. I was recording it. The camera sort of malfunctioned and I didn't get to show it to you guys, which was heartbreaking, but also it would have been really good to have had it to see the shot. But that deer came in working, you know, if you can imagine that bottom, and I'm on one side of it, he came in from the other side working to my left, sort of going in slightly the opposite direction of where the big one that I had shot the week prior was. And I grunted at him right when he hit that pine thicket, because I always try to make sure that when I'm grunting that they can't quite see where the grunt came from. Like, I always kind of want to make it like they're curious, you know, that's kind of what I'm tapping into. So I waited for him to get inside of that, and then I just hit a couple soft grunts, and he kind of stopped and looked back. And then he, after a few seconds, you know, started walking again. I hit him with a couple more soft grunts. Again, stopped and looked back. Then started walking again. And at this point, he's probably about, I don't know, 60 yards. I'm seeing that he is absolutely not turning around. He's walking away from me. And so I kind of threw out a Hail Mary. I hit a doe bleat and then followed that up with a couple like tending grunts. And that turned him on a dime, and he came right back to me, worked around in front of me, was a little bit further out. I estimated he was at 30 yards, so put that 30-yard pin right on his shoulder and sent it. And the shot ended up, as best I could tell in the moment, it ended up being a little bit high, but I think critically a little too far forward. And didn't end up being enough to kill him. So, you know, yeah, again, it would have been nice to have been able to see that on the video and know right away, like, what the shot looked like. But tracked blood for about 200 yards and then got a dog out, and they followed the trail for about a mile. And ultimately determined that that buck was probably gonna live. So yeah, a little bit disappointing, but still, it's an awesome hunt. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about that one.
Well, it sounds like you seen tons of deer.
Yeah,
like, I don't. Could you estimate how many deer you probably seen in that week span?
So basically I hunted in that area. I've only hunted in that area 3 days. So 3 days, six hunts total, and I've probably seen 1, 2, 3, 4, I think I've seen probably a total of 6 bucks and probably about the same number of does. So probably between 10 and 15 deer, and quite a bit of bucks. That's kind of what surprised me, actually, is like just the number of bucks that I've seen moving through that area.
Yeah. You found that type of habitat that a buck just really likes. And
yeah.
It sounds like you've learned a lot from it. You let the deer tell you where they were bedding, where they were feeding. You shot a deer, watched where it ran, confirmed.
Yeah.
Now you know kind of for the future of what those deer are looking for, like cover-wise and what they feel comfortable in. So that's a lot of stuff learned.
Yeah, no, that's been the cool. And it's still continuing. Like, I still, you know, I've learned a lot about that area, but I think that there's still so much more to it that I don't yet understand or haven't figured out. There's other sections of that area. Like, for example, when I was blood trailing that last buck, got into an area that I would not have walked into, but it was just, I mean, both me and the tracker like stopped on a dime and was like, whoa. I mean, just huge rubs, big, like massive scrapes in the ground, huge paw print. I mean, like, there is a nice buck that is, that's probably his core area. There's just a lot of good buck sign there. So I definitely dropped some pins on that. And, I threw a cell cam, just on the inside edge of the bedding and that other spot, kind of where I'd seen that buck walk out, last week. And so I've been kind of keeping tabs on that and plan to get back down there and scout and learn. And, I think this is true for a lot of people, but that's probably the thing. Like, I love everything about hunting. There's probably nothing I don't love about it. I love shot execution. I love harvesting deer. I love eating deer, but probably my favorite is trying to understand them. Trying to look at a map, look at the terrain, and trying to figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it and how they're using it. And that is probably more satisfying to me than even harvesting a nice animal. It's when I take like a new piece of public that I've never hunted before, or a new block in a piece of public that I've never hunted before, and I start off cyber scouting it and kind of breaking it down, and, you know, go in there and go to where I drop my pins, and I see exactly what I thought I would see. That is immensely rewarding. And I would say that's probably been my journey as a deer hunter, has been really just about trying to understand the animal and figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it. So
I would say one thing that I think you did that other hunters probably should pay attention to is, you said you hunted this area for 5 years, correct? This is the fifth. Well,
not this location, but this public land.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you went 3 years with just getting your butt kicked, and you stayed with it, and you started figuring something out on year four, and here we go on year five, and you're just building upon that and compiling stuff after years, and it's just stick with it. It's not you're gonna go out there and immediately start killing deer. This, when you're hunting public land, it takes a while.
Yeah,
you're gonna get your butt kicked, and you just stick with it and keep compiling everything you learned, and eventually it will pay off.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. And I would also like, I'd add to that, knowing when to like try something different. So this piece of public, like a lot of public in Florida, has a creek that runs through it. And so for a lot of my hunts out there for years, it entailed basically hunting the really thick stuff right along the edge of the creek. And I would consistently see does and young bucks, and or I would see nothing. And I would see, you know, decent sign, but I wasn't seeing the kind of deer activity nor the size of the deer that I wanted to see. And so eventually I said, okay, well, you got to change something up here. Let's check out some of these other areas. And like I said, this particular spot, if I showed it to you on the map, you would, it doesn't stand out as anything. Like, you probably wouldn't look at it and go like, yeah, like that's where deer are going to be. But it's just the right things coming together with the, you know, the feed trees that are there. I do think that the topography, that bottom, I think plays into it. The bedding that's close by, once kind of put it all together, it's like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. But it's not the kind of thing that you would look at on a map and think that deer are going to be there. So I think that's another big part of it is, like, you know, if you're out there just getting your butt kicked, don't just keep doing the same thing. You know, try something different. Keep moving. As Graybeard would say, continue the hunt. Don't just, like, sit there and wait for something to walk by you.
So as a disclaimer, I can't actually hear Brett. I haven't been able to hear Brett for like 15 minutes. I can barely hear over your mic parts of what he's saying, but y'all had a great dialogue. I loved it. Okay. I have got a freeze frame of Brett that's been a freeze frame for like the last solid 15-20 minutes. The good news about the software is it's recording his audio independently from everybody else's, so the podcast isn't going anywhere. But I'm going to say that this is probably a good point, unless you have something to add. Probably a good point to put a pin in this, because I can't really talk to Brett.
No, I mean, I think the only thing I would add is I just want to, you know, give a big shout out to the guys that I've kind of already named a bunch of them, but there's a ton, dude. And I mean, I could sit here and just rattle them off, but they know who they are. The guys that are active in our group have helped me tremendously in so many ways. And I'll sometimes catch myself saying that, like, oh, I'm self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that's really not true. That's not true at all. And I don't think there's any coincidence that, that while, yes, I've been out there putting in the work and getting my butt kicked and doing the process, success really also coincided with me joining this group. And, I don't think that's accidental. I think that, just having a group like this to bounce questions off of, to pick their brains, to tell you, like, no, dude, you know, stop what you're doing, get back up in the tree, mm-hmm. all the things. I mean, you've seen them. You've seen so many of the mistakes that I've made and things that I've done. And, I just can't thank the men in this group and the guys that have helped me out enough. And it's an honor. It's an honor to be a part of this group. It's an honor to have something to give back. And, I appreciate what you guys do.
Well, I'm gonna spread a little more love, even a little another layer. You've got the guys like Graybeard who know what the hell they're talking about, and Splitshot who really work to make sure people have the information they need. And then you got like 67 cheerleaders that are all out there just rooting you on. You know, Pat, God bless his soul, he can't get on deer consistently to save his life. But I tell you something, he's your biggest advocate at the end of the day, man. And if you sleep in too many times during the season, J-Bo's going to poke fun at you to try and encourage you to get out there. You know, I mean, you got a whole group of guys out there just rooting you on the whole time. And every time somebody kills something, it's the worst thing. I keep telling everybody it's the worst and the best thing. You're trying to be productive at work. I listen to the Marco Polo like a live podcast. I put my headphones in. I'm doing my work and the app's just sitting over there open, plugged in. And then somebody says something and it's just a little like live podcast that's going on. And then you got Bronk losing his crap in the group today. You know, good luck being productive.
That's right. So awesome.
And then you got Kurt like, hey, I just killed my sixth deer. And everybody's like, you gotta be kidding me. You know, like it's just this awesome thing. So I encourage everybody, if you're struggling, if you're one of those guys out there that you're up against that wall and you're frustrated, this is a group for you. That's why we have this community. Yeah. We're leaning into that hard. It's in the freaking intro of the podcast. I hope that's indicative of how serious we take it. We moderate it very seriously to make sure it's nothing but mm-hmm. you know, positivity and encouragement, and I hope people understand it's a resource that's there for you to better yourself. And I don't think anybody in that group is doing anything but moving forward. Even if it's slowly, you're moving forward. So Kurt, man, I appreciate you taking time out your day. We're going to have you back on. You've been requested heavily the past year or two, so we're going to have you back on. You've still got like 3 deer tags left, so there's plenty of opportunities for success stories to come.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to I have a goal. I want to kill a buck on public land in every state in the nation.
Okay.
So I'm trying to start that this year with a destination hunt out somewhere outside of Florida. So hopefully some more exciting polos to come. We'll see. But thanks for having me and thanks for this group, man, and what you guys have put together. I really appreciate it.
In wild country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking.
Mississippi Delta and Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinner's crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.